Welcome to That Jiu-Jitsu Podcast, where the goal is to make your jiu-jitsu better one episode at a time. If you're following me on Instagram at Justin Lesko, you know that I recently did commentary for a jiu-jitsu event, and that was a lot of fun. I had a great time doing that, but I also thought maybe I should speak to someone who is really good at commentary, and that's what we're going to do today. Today, I am speaking with a jiu-jitsu competitor who also happens to be a professional MMA commentator. She is the host of the Beast with Brains podcast on Spotify. She also has a YouTube channel with millions of views, and her videos are all about jiu-jitsu, MMA. She has interviews with competitors and event highlights. We've got a lot to talk about, so let's not waste any more time. Let's welcome to the show Alex Wendling. Alex, thank you so much for coming on and talking to me. I love your YouTube channel, and the perks of doing this show and this YouTube channel is that I get to talk to people that I just want to hang out with and talk with. So I appreciate you coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, I can't wait to talk about this stuff. I love your channel as well. I forget what the first video it was that I came across, but yeah, when you're in this niche and you're just like cranking out content, it just, you know, everything becomes a blur.
Yeah. So what I'll probably do now is I think enough time has passed on some of your videos that I'll go back and just steal the idea and just make it my own. So part of why I wanted to talk to you is to get permission to do that.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, that's kind of, you know, some of the best inspiration that I've gotten has been inspired from other people and how you can like put your own creative twist on things. Yeah. Now that I think about it, like none of my content is like super, super overly original. Like I do tape studies, interviews, you know, you can't really reinvent the real wheel when it comes to YouTube, but if you do, it might pop off.
The first thing I always ask people when I talk to them is just, how did you get involved in combat sports? Like, we'll get to all the content stuff, but just combat sports in general.
Yeah. So for me, I was always a little athlete growing up, and I had an older brother. We were big WWE fans. And so my big dream when I was younger was that I actually got in trouble because I went to Catholic school for telling my Spanish teacher this. I was like, I want to be a WWE diva when I grow up. And this was at the time, like when WWE divas were a little bit more promiscuous looking and like less of athletes and a little bit more of just like props on stages. So it didn't come across well in my second grade class, but it pissed her off so much. And I could see in her eyes, it pissed her off so much. It like really intrigued me, and it made me made me more interested in it. Like I, even as a child, I was always interested in things that like would piss people off. I was a little bit more of a daredevil, much more than my brother. And then, yeah, I just, you know, I did gymnastics when I was little, which I wish I continued because that would have helped with my wrestling. But then I got into basketball, which helped me with like contact sports. And I did that through, high school. Then when I got to college, it was just, a lot of weightlifting, but I was always like a big, big fan of the UFC. Me and my dad would watch all the time. Ronda Rousey era. When I was like a junior and senior in high school, we would like be having UFC parties and all that. So basically, long story short, I go to college for broadcast journalism. I'm covering regular sports, and all that gets canceled. So instead of waiting around to get my job back at Florida State doing sideline reporting and production and all that, I'm like, I have no idea when all this Rona stuff is going to end. I may as well just book it, which is the opposite of what everyone did. Everyone went from California to Florida. I went from Florida to California, and I just started interviewing people in the jiu-jitsu space specifically for some reason. I don't know why I was like attracted to, I read the Gracie Jiu-Jitsu Diet book, which is like the funniest, most ridiculous diet book you could have if you actually follow that diet. And then I just, you know, started posting stuff that you can still find on my channel that are super cringe. Like there was one video where I literally was like, Tony Ferguson's signature move, the Darcy choke. Like I was just so brand new to everything, but like, I was, you know, I knew what I wanted to do. I knew that then I wanted to like work for the UFC. So I was like, I'm just going to do all this content. So yeah, that's kind of how it kind of snowball affected into what it is today.
And how did you go from like the content and those early videos, which by the way, my biggest nightmare ever is that someone finds the very first video I ever posted on Instagram or YouTube or something and shows it to me. That would be like a different level of hell. But how did you go from that to doing the commentary that you do now?
So I feel like it was all just word of mouth and networking. I think one of the big things that I learned from FSU was going out to get the opportunity. And some opportunities do just fall in your lap sometimes, because divine timing is definitely a real thing, but it is because of your preparation before that moment. So I think I would just, so my very first time to Las Vegas, I was turning 22, and I was going to cover submission series. They changed the name recently. So that was the first jiu-jitsu. I'd made a reel from that stuff. Like, I literally drove to Vegas by myself. The guy, the hotel concierge, happened to be making conversation with me. And then I told him that I was going to be covering an event. He's like, I'm a videographer, I can help you. So he comes with me to the event, helps me shoot. I'm like overdressed in this broadcast reporter, like trying to be freaking Megan O'Leary out here. And I am just, you know, shooting stuff. So that was my first like piece of live jiu-jitsu content that I had. Then I, you know, I've always been proactive in terms of, you know, building my resumes, going on LinkedIn, connecting with people that, and making like organic, genuine connections with people. Like, not like, oh, you're the producer of this company or you're this and that. Like, like the connections that I made with the people at High Rollers Jiu-Jitsu, it's like this cannabis infused jiu-jitsu competition. That was all organic. Like, I just kind of showed up and I was like smoking with people and talking and blah, blah, blah. And the guy who was supposed to be announcing had gotten too high. And I was, and they happened to know that.
Common problem in a jiu-jitsu tournament. Common problem in a jiu-jitsu event. I mean, it happens.
Especially a High Rollers one, for sure. So they just came up to me and they were like, hey, you do kind of interviewing and reporting. Do you think you can do announcing? So I did the ring announcing, the mat announcing for the fighters. And then that just became, you know, I created a position that didn't exist within the High Rollers broadcast. So yeah, everything kind of just happened very organically. And a lot of it didn't happen organically. Like, some of the situations that I would have to put myself in were like uncomfortable. Like, I felt like I was being, like I was like encroaching on people's space. Like, sometimes when you have to like go into a gym, like, I don't know if you're familiar with Jason Perillo's old, Ruka gym. It's like a private gym in Costa Mesa. It closed down recently, but it's like a private gym. So, you know, reaching out to fighters, because this isn't like the NBA where you reach out to the SID or the agent and then they connect you. It's like you reach out really to the fighters for the most part, unless, you know, they're really big and they have managers and you kind of book interviews through Instagram or whatever. And so there were a lot of times where I felt like out of place, because like my YouTube channel didn't barely had like 1,000 subscribers. And it's like, oh, well, what are you making this video for? So there was definitely a lot of moments that didn't feel super natural that I had to like get over. And like, when the camera came on, do a good interview and make the most of it. But yeah, it definitely built a lot of character putting yourself out there.
Now, I mean, I think you're pretty good at it. Do you feel like, is that something you had to work on, like your interview skills and your commentary skills? Is that something you made like a conscious effort to improve? Or do you think just with time, it kind of naturally got better?
I think I had to make conscious efforts constantly. And I still have to become the best that I want to be on camera. People will tell me now, they're like, oh my gosh, you're so natural on camera and blah, blah, blah. When I was in college, there's like a stand-up that I had, like my first ever stand-up. And it like, it did not come naturally to me, you know, being able to look into the camera lens, deliver a hit. And so that took a lot of practice. That's what I went to college for. And then when it comes to figuring out how to handle interviews with different personalities, that took a lot. And then also like the moments leading up to the interview, what am I doing to help calm down my interview subject? What am I doing to, you know, match their energy if they just got done with a fight? You know, all these little things that they don't really teach you in college. Like, they teach you how to write, you know, VO. They teach you how to, you know, match up the B-roll. But sometimes they don't teach you the little things that make you a trusted interviewee subject, or even someone that someone wants to talk to after their fight. Like, if you have bad energy and someone just won their fight and they don't want to talk to you, it's going to be a horrible interview. So yeah. And there's also just like different people that you have to balance too, because sometimes you could get like a really religious person that you're interviewing and they're like actually not even allowed to like look at women or talk to women. So like, even being set up on that interview is like, what am I supposed to do with this interview? Because there's not much that can be done. So it was just a balancing act, you know, try to make the most of it and have fun.
How long have you been doing jiu-jitsu? Because I know on your page, you do like rolling commentary and I like watching those videos. But how long have you been training jiu-jitsu?
So I graduated college in 2020, and then I moved to California. I think I did one self-defense class in college, and then jiu-jitsu really started like the summer of 2020. I went to a Muay Thai gym and there was a jiu-jitsu thing in it, and I didn't really enjoy the jiu-jitsu so much there. And also my intention with jiu-jitsu was to get better for commentary. My love for jiu-jitsu didn't really happen until I found 10th Planet, and it was all, actually, I'll take that back. My love originally started with Triunfo in Orange County. They're a gi school, super family friendly. Everything was awesome. That was in 2021 when I was really consistently starting to train jiu-jitsu only and a little bit of striking. But I noticed that in the beginning, it was really important to just focus on the jiu-jitsu, like getting the basics down with everything and like understanding pressure and just frames and all the little things and intricacies that go into jiu-jitsu. And so I guess now 2021 to 2024 is that how long I've done it? I had to take a few little breaks once I got stacked, and then the girl like completely crushed me in my neck, and all I heard was like, and that spooked me. So, you know, I think the max amount of time I've taken breaks is either like 4 to 6 months, hopefully not that much, but I wouldn't doubt if it ever got that bad. So
do you think that jiu-jitsu has improved your ability to do commentary and interviews? Has that made it a little bit smoother and easier for you?
100%. And it also just makes it more interesting, because I would be at the High Rollers events, my first or jiu-jitsu submission grappling. It was just hard for me to understand what was going on and how I could ask the best question for the grappler. MMA, it's a little bit easier to understand because there's, you know, people can strike into a submission and you can kind of talk about the sequence to getting to that point. Whereas jiu-jitsu, you need to know some of the terms or some of the technicalities of it. So 100%, I would not be the same reporter that I am today if I did not have jiu-jitsu experience that I have now.
Yeah, my, not really related, but kind of the same, but my dad started training jiu-jitsu when I was fighting MMA, because we'd be on the ground and I'd be on top and I'd be in mount, and he'd be yelling, "Get up," because he didn't know what was happening. So he's in the crowd watching the fight, not understanding what's going on. So he started training jiu-jitsu just to have like a grasp of what was actually happening in the fight. So I think it's definitely changed the way he watches fights now. So I can imagine it would make your job a little bit easier too, just having more of an understanding.
Yeah, and I'm sure UFC fans would definitely benefit from it as well if they weren't so bored when there's like wall grappling going on, or they could understand. Yes, I get understand like when you feel like someone's resting or something like that. But I feel like if UFC fans happen to know a little bit more about grappling, we would get much less of the booing instantly as there's some type of grappling exchange. So yeah, I think it definitely makes things more entertaining and easier for the post-fight interviews.
So on your YouTube channel, I like that you have like lots of different content. You have the rolling commentary, you know, you do interviews and training stuff. Obviously, there's like highlights from you doing your job. Is there a style of video that you enjoy making the most? Is there a content that you like creating more than others?
I definitely think one of my favorites, but then also my least, it also has the least favorite part for me. I love the interviews, but I hate the coordination part. So I think something that I'm going to hire for my full-time team coming up, I have to do the editor first, and then I need a social person, and then I need someone who can handle like the logistics of booking me. I don't like dealing with that part, because you just have to deal with like what I did to you the other day. Like, hey, sorry, I can't make it. And like, but I get that so much more with jiu-jitsu people specifically, then I could have an MMA person or like a different sport person, and they're usually like pretty good with it. But I've had just various times where it's the jiu-jitsu person who always has to move, always has to change, or doesn't have the time and different stuff like that. So those are the times where I get like a little bit annoyed, and it makes me just not want to make the content. But the interview itself, I usually have a lot of fun with if the interview subject is willing to have fun with me. The commentary, so this was like when I was really living in LA and I was going to a gym with my teammate Smitty, who's like this really popular TikToker. And I guess he was just like rubbing off in me in a way that like I was like, oh, I should be making content. That just makes sense. And then I had like these moments within my jiu-jitsu competition career where I was thinking to myself, I'm like, am I even competing and doing this jujitsu stuff because I want to, or am I doing it because of content? And so I really had to like look at myself in the mirror and be like, that really turns me off to myself if I'm doing this with like the sole intention of making content or something like that, or like an ego boost so I can like show people that I won a gold medal. Like, I didn't like that aspect of it. And then you also have to think about that is kind of just what social media in general is. It's not always like that, but and then sometimes you also have to deal with like the ones that did get really popular, the ones that went viral for me were always the ones that pitted something against someone or like sparked a hot topic. Like one of them that went really popular was me going against probably like a 17-year-old or 16-year-old kid guy. He has braces. He's like a, you know, not yet built his man strength. And so he's relatively new and I'm able to, you know, submit him and stuff. And so there becomes like the whole issue of like, well, he's not even trying, or he's, you know, this is not right, or something like that. And then I'll have one where I'm grappling a full grown man and I'll say something like, because this is a competition class and you're supposed to go hard in the competition class. And I'm very aware of like energies, you know, I'm not making shit up in my head. So his nickname really was Aggressive Blank. I won't say what his name is actually, because, you know, I don't want to keep the clip going, but it went very, very viral. And then it's like, oh, all these women, they're always, you know, on the jujitsu mats saying that guys are being aggressive, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, no, I'm saying that I like how he's being aggressive because it was like a lot. Like I literally had to get out of certain positions. And it's just, you know, the way guys roll with you for the most part, it's not how what you feel in competitions, but because we were in a competition class, he was like going hard with me. And so then you kind of have to, there was like a point in time where I was still participating and arguing on the internet. Not recently, like six or 7 months ago, I was just like, all right, we're drawing the line. If I'm going to do that for like engagement and stuff, I'm going to hire someone to do that for me because it's just a waste of brain cells. But yeah, it was just like, I have fun making it and I have fun doing the commentary. And then sometimes I'll also look back in retrospect and be like, oh, well, maybe I shouldn't have called him aggressive, even though I meant it in a positive way. Everyone's twisting it into being like, I'm saying that he's like bullying me. Like that wasn't the point of the video, but you know how the internet is. So those are some of my favorites, but it's funny how like they can just like curtail into something that it wasn't meant to be, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's tough too with like, especially with jujitsu and like combat sports, when it's like a direct one-on-one competition comparison, whatever, where like I post like training clips and rolling clips and whatever, but then you don't want to like stray into the, oh, you're just beating up on a blue belt. Oh, you're just doing,
yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? So I definitely know what you mean when you start thinking about like the content versus the training and what am I doing versus what I'm trying to create and post. And like, it got to the point where now, like I would say months ago, I realized that I was doing stuff in a role because I wanted it to look a certain way on the camera that was recording at the side of the mat. So we started kind of just recording stuff we wanted to record after the class so that I'm not training and thinking like, oh, I need, you know, XYZ clips. So I got to try to make this submission happen in class. You know what I mean? It's hard. It can get really easy to fall down the rabbit hole of like, I like creating content, so I create it, versus I need to have content to post, so I try to make it happen. You know what I mean? Like, I'd rather stay on that organic side of I just happen to post the stuff that happens plus the things I plan out versus hunting for content, hoping for something to happen.
Yeah. But then the other genuine side of it is like, you could be recording strictly for tape study purposes. And then you're like going through it in tape study and being like, oh, that was kind of cool. And so there, I think it's just like a balancing act for sure. Cause I do feel you like it, like what you were saying, like, oh, just beating up on a blue belt or whatever. Like there will always be comments like that. And then I love how my friend from 10th Planet, Smitty, he just literally lets those comment and it doesn't bother him at all. Like I am a little bit more of like, I don't want to be perceived as like someone who is recording and like trying to make someone look bad or something like this and that. And so that's what I think that's why that volume for me, it's gone a little bit down, But in terms of just like recording and being able to look back and for tape study purposes, I still find it super, super valuable. But yeah, that's like kind of the balancing act that I was having too. Cause I was just like, well, what am I really getting out of showing my rules to the world? Well, one, I love doing the commentary aspect. Two, I think it's cool for people to understand what's going on in a white belt girl's mind, rolling with someone, you know, twice her size. Like, I think that this is actually helping someone, you know? Whereas like, there was like a point where if I'm competing and I'm only posting these highlights of myself, that was like making me feel like I was being egotistical. Like those were the type of moments where I was like, well, I don't really like this. Like I want my content to like serve people in some way. And me just getting an easy, you know, submission against a white belt that I'm probably sandbagging against at this point because I probably should be in the blue belt division, which I'm going to compete against in next time. But like, you know, there were just like little moments like that where I had to like really look at myself and the type of content I was making and be honest with myself and be like, all right, we're not going to repost that highlight or something like that, you know?
Right, right. Well, and you know, I tell everyone, record your roles. It's the best thing in the world. Record your roles. It's my favorite thing to be able to go back and see, like you're rolling with people and they hit you with something. And in the moment, you don't really know what happened. And then you do 10 more rounds. You're not going to remember that weird thing that happened. The ability to go back and to watch it is like the best thing in the world. And that's sort of how I got started just like with my Instagram, where I was recording for film study. I was recording all the rounds to just go back and watch them. And like you said, something cool would happen. I'd be like, oh, that's pretty cool. And I'd post it and people liked it. And it just kind of like kept building up. And I think it's really easy to, like, you know, this feeling when you post something and a lot of people like it and a lot of people watch it. It's a good feeling. It makes you feel happy to like have all these views on your video because you posted something you thought would be cool. People validated that thought that it's cool and you get a bunch of views on it. And I think it's really easy to then turn into the, okay, I need those views again. I need another video that has all those views. I need that good feeling of like there's plenty of times I post a video that I think is going to be good and it doesn't get a lot of views. And I'm like, all right, well, maybe I suck at jujitsu and everyone hates me. Like, it's such a balancing act of you're trying to post stuff because you like it and not just chasing the views. And that's what it mm-hmm. I go through those phases of like, I feel down if I post something that doesn't do well. And then you have to just like remind yourself, like, I'm posting this because I think it's cool. You know what I mean? I make the certain videos on my channel because I think they're fun to make. And I do interviews that I think will be fun and be cool. And if you can approach the content creation like selfishly, like this is the stuff I want to make, I think that's the more organic way to do it.
Yeah. And just not being a slave to whatever algorithm they have pushed out at the time. Because there could be a time where your commentary or jujitsu videos are doing really well. And then now all of a sudden they want like long form videos on TikTok. They're always changing it. And I'm reading this book called The Shallows right now on what social media is doing to our brains. And that kind of, you know, really... It got me woke. It had me, you know, on a long break from all social media. It had me really reevaluating what I want to do with my life in general. And it also, you know, repositioned what my current stance is in my content creator identity. Because last year I was like mixing up what being a social media influencer is versus what being a broadcaster is. And you'll see with my volume now on Instagram and TikTok, and just other platforms, I'm not really posting every day because I'm not trying to be a social media influencer. If you're trying to be a social media influencer, there's like a certain pattern that you need to follow in order to get that growth. And when you're trying to be a broadcaster, it's good to have a big social media following, but you want the social media following to come from your broadcast. Like, you want to get popular from that. I don't really want to get popular from having a super, super hot take or do it, or, you know, punching someone at Venice Beach and then being like, haha, let's jujitsu roll now. Like, I don't want to get famous off of that. I want to get famous off of, oh, like I recognize her from that broadcast, or, oh, I recognize her from that jujitsu competition blog. Like, I want to be recognized for the long form stuff. And if people happen to see my stuff on social media every now and then, okay, cool. Give me a follow, say what's up. But the book I'm reading right now really made me realize that like long-term, I don't want to be working in social media. Like, I think having to post every day is actually not the worst job. There are worse jobs, but it's something that I don't want for myself. And that was only a recent revelation that I had, like between 2023 and 2024, like those months, I was like really figuring out what I actually want from this, you know?
Well, and, you know, it was like, I actually talked about this on my Instagram, I guess it was like a year ago or so, but you know, Instagram was trying to steal creators from TikTok, and you know, TikTok has like the creator fund and they pay and whatever. And Instagram was like, okay, cool, we'll pay you for reels and views. And they were like paying out like, you know, a decent amount of money. And then all of a sudden they were like, we're not paying for videos anymore. Like, we're not going to pay creators for reels. Like, we're not doing that. And that was a real bummer because, you know, that was a good amount of money for putting, you know, videos on the internet. Like, it's a good amount of money for not a lot of work. And when it happened, I even like, I put a video like, I'm just not going to post that much on Instagram. Like, I'm probably not going to use this platform that much because they're not going to pay me, and YouTube will and TikTok will. So I'll go there. But then I still post on Instagram. You know what I mean? Like, I still like it. I still do it. Even though a year ago I said I probably wouldn't use it that much. It's still the platform that I do use the most, even though they don't pay. Like, there is something about, I get the enjoyment of posting. I try not to be the person who's chasing the high of getting a bunch of views. I try to be the person who's just posting because I like it. But I could see how you could very easily fall into the rabbit hole of, this is bad for my brain and I shouldn't do it anymore.
100%. Yeah. And I think you're spot on about Instagram being like the main social media for people. I feel like that if someone were to only have one social media, it would be Instagram. I feel like I just posted recently, if you're a jiu-jitsu fan and you don't have Instagram, it's really hard to keep up with what's going on because you can't get the ADCC live chats. You can't get Gordon Ryan complaining about this or that. You can't get Craig Jones being a silly motherfucker. Sorry if you can't curse on here.
You can. Go ahead.
Clipping up stuff.
You're good. You're good.
So yeah, I just feel like the time that I did take away from social media completely, the first month was all good. I was, you know, in Mexico, blah, blah, blah. But then it got to the point where, because I still work in social media. I work for Combate Global's TikTok, so I had to be on there a little bit. So I had to be able to access the Instagram of the fighters sometimes to like take content. So I had an account that is like a burner account, basically, that I could go on and I check stuff if I need to. But I still felt like in a much healthier state of mind because it wasn't like my personal stuff that I'm checking or seeing who's like looking at my stories or different like things to get like weirdly obsessed over. Also, if you're like going through emotional shit, like social media is like the worst thing ever. Like, especially if you're a Gen Zer like myself and you're a chronic oversharer, like if I'm going through something emotional, I don't want to have social media because I'm a chronic oversharer. I'll be like, blah, 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 blah. So yeah, I noticed that when I was off of social media on my personal accounts, I still ended up using it because I, you know, paid a salary to work in it. So I was like, all right, well, I may as well bring my social media back and like at least grow my channels if I'm still going to have to be on this shit.
So what do you have like coming up? What do you have on the horizon where we can look forward to seeing you?
So coming up, I feel super, super blessed that President Campbell of Combate Global has so much faith in me. He moved me into the commentator position at the end of last year after I did a year of TikTok social media work. And now we have a TV show coming up that I'll be flying out for, I think, in April. I don't know when it'll actually premiere, but the season for Combate Global starts May 11th, and that will be on Fuse TV. So you can stream that. I'll be on the English broadcast. If you speak Spanish and you want the Spanish broadcast, you can watch it on VIX Plus. And then we have PGF. I don't know if you've been keeping
I'm
up
so
with
pumped
all
about
of that.
PGF. I talked to Brandon McCatherine like in the summertime. We talked like right as that was like the work was starting on that. So I'm going to try to use my connection now to you and to him to somehow get like the inside track. But yeah, go ahead.
Yes. So PGF, the Professional Grappling Federation, is everything you love about sports plus jiu-jitsu. And they're really trying to elevate the sport of jiu-jitsu into its own official league with like set standards, set rules, and basically legitimizing the sport and doing it with a grand prize of not only the 100K, but also the opportunity to potentially win 20K if you make it into the playoffs. So there's just so much strategy that goes into this event because one, it's going to start with the coaches. We have four legendary coaches: Eddie Bravo, Hegan Machado, Roger Gracie, and Andre Galvao. So we have four awesome coaches that are going to get a certain amount of money to spend on bidding for fighters at the draft. So again, everything you love about sports plus jujitsu. Like, these are going to be the teams made. There's 20 athletes and separated into four teams. So five for each team. And they're going to all be in Airbnbs together. They're going to have like their little, like the Ultimate Fighter moments, almost like trying to, you know, strategize together, you know, maybe get on each other's nerves. Who knows who's going to be living together? I think that will be very entertaining. We have a few heels in this season of PGF 2. The qualifier was so insane. And so that's going to be April, coming up in April, April 16th to 20th. And then the whole fight week is going to be on YouTube for free. But then the playoffs is going to be for pay-per-view. So basically, go to BMAX YouTube channel, BMAX Instagram, PGF as well. Subscribe there. And you're going to see all of the drama that unfolds in the week. I'll be the sideline reporter. I'll be getting all the little drama, the tidbits. You know, there's a lot that could happen in, they're going to have three matches a night, every athlete. So they're going to compete at least 12 times throughout the week. And there could be a bunch of different things that happen. Like, chokes are 6 points. Leg locks, joint locks are 3 points. So if, you know, there's a really close scoring card going on with the teams, like someone might let their stuff pop and then not be able to compete the next day. So there's like so many different things that can happen that I don't think people realize. Like, it's not just a tournament where like, oh, this is all happening in one night. Like, this is like a week thing, like a season long jujitsu sports league. There's going to be a fantasy league that people can participate in. This is like everything that people love about regular sports and jujitsu. And it's really just like setting the foundation of it. Everyone on the team is so freaking helpful with everything. Keelan is like a production genius. Plaster was there at the qualifier. You know, obviously you have a lot of support from the 10th Planet Network in general, with Eddie Bravo being one of the coaches. So it is to the moon with PGF. I can't speak highly enough of them. And I'm just so honored that they're having me be a part of it as well. So that's coming up in April.
Awesome. I am looking forward to it. Like I said, I talked to BMAC over the summer, previous guest on the program. Make sure you check that one out.
And yes,
he was like kind of teasing it a little bit. We were talking about, I think they were leading into the qualifiers. So like I said, I'm going to use you two as my connection and then maybe snag a few interviews from some of the competitors afterwards. So make sure you put a good word in when you're out there talking to them for me.
Yeah, no, we definitely want as much media coverage as we can get. And I know that they've solidified some of the roster. So we definitely need to get people on your channel talking about, you know, their chances of winning 100K plus 20. It's going to be a good one. And then also, of course, you know, a shout out to Zoltan, who's the one who invested the 100K grand prize, and Heather Gracie, who is such a fundamental part of getting everything set up. She has Hoist Gracie as one of the ambassadors or advisors for the PGF now. So it just becomes more and more official, the people that are getting involved with it. So it really is just the beginning. I feel so blessed to be a part of something at the start, because it kind of almost gives off this, like, you know, UFC in 98, 97 type vibe. Like, we're living in it, and it might not feel like that yet, but that's how big it is if you have faith in where jujitsu can go. So it's very exciting.
I agree. Now, we've been talking for about a half hour. If someone isn't already following you or on your YouTube, just let everyone know where they can find more of Alex.
Yes, thank you so much for having me, Justin. So you guys can find me on Instagram, Alex Wendling Live. I will be doing live chats with jujitsu people, regular athletes. I'm going to start covering more basketball, normal sports as well. And then also my YouTube channel is Alex Wendling Live. On Twitter, you can catch me on UFC Fight Nights. Not so much Combate Global Fight Nights, because I do the commentary for that. But I also post a lot of stuff there at Alex Wendling X, because they didn't have enough room for live. And then I think on TikTok, I'm Alex Wendling Live as well. So I post some stuff on there as well. You know how it is, life of a media person. You kind of have to have all these different channels. But yeah, that's where you can catch me. A lot of fun content coming out soon. And I'm just so thankful that you had me on. This was such an awesome conversation.
I appreciate it so much. Like I said the other day, you're doing me a favor by coming on and talking. So I'm happy to pick your brain and have you as long as I can. So thank you so much, Alex.
Thank you. Cheers.
Thank you to Alex for coming on and talking with me today. Down in the episode notes are all of the links for all of her stuff, so please check those out. I have more in the works for you, so please stay tuned for that. Thanks so much for listening, and I will see you in the next one.